we will return to the fundamental positions that I hold, that I articulate, as it relates to my relationship with Yahweh and what this program stands for during the second hour of our program tomorrow. And the thing to keep in mind as we now transition back to the prophecy that is found in Yeshaya, Isaiah 17 and 18, is that everything that this program stands for strives to be wholly and completely consistent with Yahweh's testimony. So, as I explain, that Jesus Christ is not valid, that neither bear any resemblance to any individual, not now, not ever, and that if you're committed to a religion that is based on that kind of a lie, you ought to be very careful. That position is not my position. It's not my interpretation. It's what God has to say. He made it very clear that the name is Yahusha, and that that Yahusha is Yahweh saving us and therefore doing the work of Yah. And it's essential that you know that if you want to have a relationship with him. And God made it very clear there would never be a New Testament. There would never be a new covenant. And therefore, the entire basis of Christianity is wrong, is invalid. And he made it extraordinarily clear that his Torah was forever. That doesn't make a person legalistic. It makes a person just like Yahusha when you observe it. God wants us to observe his teaching, his guidance. To observe it means to use your eyes to read it, to use your mouth and your ears to recite it and listen to it being recited. Means to closely examine and carefully consider the words. And it is from that basis that I speak. That being the case, Yahweh's Torah teaching permeates everything that he had to say, including his prophets. His Torah is communicated through the prophet Yahshua. Yahshua means salvation is from Yahweh. You'll probably recognize the name Isaiah. It's just an inept transliteration of Yahshua. Salvation is from Yah. We've spent many programs dissecting the 17th chapter, I should say, of Yahshua, Isaiah. And it has brought us to an interesting place, which is an overt condemnation of the United States. By way of quick review, what Yahshua 17 says is that there will be a war perpetrated by Islamic terrorists that will cause Damascus, which is the longest continuously occupied city in the world, to fall and to become a heap of twisted rubble. That terrorists will continue to attack Syria until they ultimately prevail and bring down the Syrian government. That even though Israel is going to be savagely attacked by a unified Islamic front, that it will survive, even though it will be badly beaten. God then says that out of the demise of Syria and the Syrian war, that there will be a call to dissect Israel, to thin Israel at the waist, making it indefensible. He then speaks of a harvest of saved souls. That would be the Teruah harvest that will commence so that our Heavenly Father removes his children at this time, so they do not have to endure the hellish tribulation that is to follow. And that's what he says follows. A horrible time of conflict and war, where Muslims, by the tens of thousands, probably as many as 150,000, rush into Israel, unstoppable as a tidal wave, a flood of hatred and rage. And this time, Israel will be unable to stop them, according to the prophecy. God himself will intervene, blow them away. And then God provides his teaching, his guidance regarding the very nature of Islam, where he says that, you know, that's the fate of those who plunder us. That's the fate of those who attempt to conquer us. And he condemns the entire nature of the Islamic religion. And from that point, he transitions directly to a warning, a condemnation against the United States of America. But before we pick up that condemnation, we have Rick, who is calling in from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hello, Rick. Rick, I see you on the switchboard. Here, there you are.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Okay, I can hear you good. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I did have some questions. I don't know if you want to change the subject, but to what you were just speaking on about the New Testament. And I agree with an awful lot of what you're saying, but I sort of come from a more Hebrew roots perspective, and we believe that a lot of the New Testament was inaccurately translated, and so instead of saying that it's the New Testament, it's the same covenant, but it's they're speaking of in Jeremiah 31, you know, where it's the renewed covenant that he makes with his people, where he writes it on his laws and his
that's not possible, Rick. One is true, but not to the extent that you would need it to be, and the other is not possible. Let's speak to one versus the other. First, your claim that it is that the reason that it comes across as being opposed to the Torah is that it has been mistranslated. One of the things that I have done is purchase and to study the manuscripts of the oldest evidences of the Greek text. And I've learned to translate Greek, and I have studied the Greek text in excruciatingly detail. And I can tell you that while there is very little correlation between the oldest manuscripts and what is used as the basis for English translations, and I can tell you that the English translations do a horrible job of rendering what's actually in the oldest Greek text, it doesn't in any way resolve the problem, which is that more than half of the Christian New Testament is based on a bold-faced lie. Paul is the false apostle spoken of in the letter to the Ephesians. Paul is the wolf in sheep's clothing spoken of at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. Paul is the person that Yahweh called out by name in Habakkuk to say he's the plague of death. And so the problem is that it's not translation error that causes the perception that there's an overt conflict between Yahweh's Torah and the text of the so-called Christian New Testament. It's the text of the so-called Christian New Testament. It's Paul. You can't work around Paul. It's irreconcilable. Now then, let me speak just a moment to renewed covenant. That's past tense. Covenant has not yet been renewed. God has not written the Torah on our hearts. He has not reconciled his relationship with Yahudah and Yisrael at this point. That's not going to happen until he returns. So it cannot be renewed in the sense of past tense. It will be renewed, but that has not occurred yet.
Well, can I comment on a couple of those things?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Well, say, for instance, I see, that Shaul or Paul is in total harmony with what we see in the Gospels and in the Book of the Acts. He takes his defense before Felix and other places where he takes his defense, and he says that he is in total harmony with the covenant and the traditions
of religion, particularly religious Jews. Yeah, his testimony for a while there was in complete harmony with religious Jews, with the Pharisees. He was trained as a Pharisee. That doesn't put him in harmony with the Torah because the Pharisees were in opposition.
No, he was in.
Rick, I'm going to make it real simple for you. I'm going to make it real simple for you. In his opening letter to the Galatians, that's the first letter that Paul wrote. About two-thirds of the way through his letter, he says that the covenant that is memorialized in the Torah was with Hagar and that it enslaves. And that therefore a new covenant has been created, and he's the one who has been called to advance it. That is completely errant. It is the opposite of what God says. And so you're in a position where if you're going to believe Paul, you have to disregard the majority of what Paul wrote. Just the bottom line here. I mean, I don't care. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what you believe. It doesn't matter your perspective. What you need to do is to read Paul's words and compare them with the Torah, and they are the opposite. They are the opposite.
And I don't see them as the opposite at all, because it's very obvious that when.
So you're telling me, Rick, that when Paul wrote in Galatians that the covenant that's memorialized in the Torah was with Hagar and enslaves, that Paul was right.
We read in the Tanakh that it's very clear that that Yahweh, when he brings his people out of Egypt, he says, "I was a husband to you."
Well, no, wait a minute. Answer the question. Was Paul lying, or was he telling the truth when he said that the covenant that's memorialized in the Torah was with Hagar and his slaves? Was he telling the truth, or was he lying? It's a simple question.
Yes. I was just explaining that. That's in total harmony. I was just going to explain to you How can that be
in harmony? Have you read what God has to say about the formation of the covenant with Abraham and in the first book of the Torah?
Well, it's in Jeremiah. He says why there is a renewed covenant.
Yes, and he doesn't say why there's a renewed covenant. He said why I'm going to renew my covenant is to reconcile my relationship with Yahudah and with Yisrael by. Yeah, literally writing the entirety of the Torah inside of them, that has nothing to do with the fact that according to the Torah, according to Yahweh, that when he established his covenant, it wasn't with Hagar. Hagar was rejected. Ishmael was rejected. And that the covenant wasn't formed with Hagar or Ishmael. It was formed with Abraham and Sarah and Ishak. In other words, the exact opposite of what Paul said is what God says. There's no explaining that. There's no working around that. You either believe Paul or you believe God. We'll be back with Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Rick in North Carolina. And the first comment to Rick in terms of the irrational position that he is holding is that Yahweh clearly says that Hagar was disqualified, as was Ishmael, from the covenant. In fact, God said absolutely not. And in the Torah, clearly says that the covenant was formed between Abraham and Sarah and their firstborn child, Ishak, which means laughter. And Paul, in his letter to the Galatians to establish his New Testament, says exactly the opposite, that the covenant in the Torah was with Hagar, that it enslaves, and therefore that there is a new covenant. The positions are exactly the opposite of one another. They can't both be true. And so since Paul is contradicting God, I don't know why you would choose to believe him. Now, why don't we just take another one. Earlier in the book of Galatians, Paul writes that the Torah cannot save, that is incapable of saving anyone. Yahweh says that his Torah is the means to salvation, and that it is the only means to save a soul. The positions are exactly the opposite of one another. If one is telling the truth, the other one is lying. Why would you choose to believe Paul, a man, over God?
Well, where does it say that the Torah saves?
Yahweh wrote, my Torah is the source for renewing and saving your soul. He wrote it in throughout the Torah. He wrote it throughout the Proverbs. He wrote it throughout the Psalms, that the Torah is the means to save. It is what saved David. You know, David was a bad dude, did a lot of bad stuff wrong. God calls him out specifically to say, you're righteous, you're vindicated. And wouldn't you know, Dode wrote the longest song, the longest message ever on how to properly observe the Torah, and he claims that the Torah is the means that grants him entrance into heaven. when God wrote the Ten Statements in stone, the first thing that he wrote, now the Ten Statements, the Ten Words, are a summation of the Torah's promises. And God begins them by introducing himself and saying, I'm your Savior. And the means that he spoke about saving are consistent with the covenant as it's presented in the Torah. Let's take another one. Paul claims that circumcision is counterproductive and that circumcision is actually in opposition to his religious stance. And Yahweh says, if you're not circumcised, you cannot participate in Passover, which means you can't become immortal. He says that if you're not circumcised, you can't be part of the covenant, which means you can't be saved, you can't be part of his family. He says, if you're not circumcised, you are excluded from heaven. And Paul says exactly the opposite. Who's telling the truth?
Well, Paul, that's why I totally believe you're misunderstanding Paul's quotation. See, his battle was with the Pharisees. His battle was
No, it wasn't. No, it never was. He never once, ever, in a single letter does Paul identify the Pharisees and say that my condemnation is against the Pharisees. Never once. In fact, he even says that he embraces the teaching of the Pharisees, that he was a really good student of the Pharisees. He never once, ever, designates any book, any writing, any statement of the Pharisees to say that he's opposed to them. Never once.
He says, I count it all rubbish. I count it all done, that I might know Yeshua HaMashiach. That's what he says.
No, he doesn't.
He says, I count it all done. I count all garbage that I might know Yeshua HaMashiach. That's what
he said. But he doesn't know him. He contradicted him. He never once quoted him.
He never once quoted him?
Not once.
Okay, Yeshua was against the Mishnah.
And by the way, he never met him. When Yahusha said to his disciples on the Olivet Discourse, he says, you know, there are going to be people that claim that they will have seen me in the wilderness. But I'm telling you that if they say that, you do not trust them. You do not follow them, because when I return, everyone's going to see me at the same time. And Paul claimed that he saw him on the road to Damascus. That means either Yahusha was lying or Paul was lying. Which one? When Paul says that the Torah has been annulled, that it is incapable of saving, and Yahusha says, don't think for a moment that I came to annul any aspect of the Torah. Every jot and every tittle, every letter, every stroke of every letter is going to continue to endure so long as the heavens and earth endure. Who is telling the truth, Paul or Yahusha?
Well, I believe Paul believes that. I believe Paul believes that very much.
He wrote exactly the opposite. I'll tell you what, Rick, I'm going to give you one last shot here.
Okay, let me
Because your positions are the antithesis of what Paul actually wrote. You've got a mythical Paul here, which is the problem with the Hebrew Roots movement. What I would like you to do, it's free. Go to questioningpaul.com. Go to questioningpaul.com. Read it. And after you've read questioningpaul.com, then what I want you to do is I want you to call me and I want you to write me. And I want you to write a rebuttal to it. Explain how your position is rational. Yahweh's Torah. Teaching, guidance, direction, and instruction. Is complete, and it's entirely perfect. Tamim, without defect, lacking nothing. Correct, genuine, right, helpful, beneficial, and true. Returning and restoring, transforming, saving the soul. Shub nefesh. Yahweh's eternal testimony and restoring witness, his eduth, is trustworthy and reliable, aman, verifiable, confirming, supportive, and establishing. Making understanding and obtaining wisdom, educating, enlightening oneself to the point of comprehension, hakam, simple, for the open-minded and receptive. That's God's perspective. It's from the Mizmor Song 19:7. It was scribed by the one person, God, called out by name to say, he's righteous. The God, one individual God loved more than any other. Flawed individual, he didn't uphold all of the instructions of the Torah. He had, by his own admission, more flaws than he had hairs on his head. Which means that Paul's statement that if you violate any one of the Torah's instructions, you are condemned by it, is wrong. Dod is innocent, tzedak, righteous by Yahweh's own declaration, and he violated most all of them. But what Dod did is he observed the Torah, closely examined it, carefully considered it. He wrote the most comprehensive explanation as to how to follow his example and to observe the Torah. It's called the 119th Psalm, where he explains precisely what the Torah conveys and how it is the guarantee that he has been saved and allowed to enter heaven. Dod's position and Paul's are the opposite of one another, just as is Yahweh's and Paul's, just as is Yosha's and Paul's. Now, Rick, I understand that you wish to interpret Paul very differently. You wish to ignore when he says things that are in direct conflict with Yahweh and Yosha, when he claims there is a second covenant when God says there isn't, when he claims that the covenant that was conveyed in the Torah was with Hagar when God says, no, the opposite is true. When he claims that the Torah can't save and God says just the opposite, as I've just read to you. Their positions are the opposite of one another. Your wishing they weren't doesn't change that. So what I recommended that you do, and I will absolutely take your call if you do it, is that you go and read Questioning Paul. Thus far, not a single person has read the book and come out at the end by believing Paul. Not one. Yahweh now plays a huge role in the book because we begin by citing Yahweh's specific warning about Paul. His real name is Shaul, and God calls him the plague of death. The book now begins by examining Yahweh's statement regarding him. It also incorporates Paul's admission that he was demon-possessed, that he was insane. It shows that Yahusha's testimony regarding this man called him the wolf in sheep's clothing, the false apostle, that he was a liar. Ultimately, Rick, your choice will be to either believe Paul was authorized by God to contradict everything God had to say and call God's plan pornography, which is what he does in the beginning of his first letter of Galatians, calling the old system pornographic. You'll either believe Paul or you'll believe Yahweh. They are the opposite. I have been, for the last 3 or 4 days after I have finished translating Yashaya 17 and 18, and we're about ready to return to the comments made and by Yahweh through Yashaya in the 18th chapter against America. I have been working to translate Daniel 7, 8, and 9. And one of the things that is undeniable, it's stunningly apparent, is that the beast that is the one known by Christians as the Antichrist, he's actually the Torahless one, that he's modeled after Paul. He will sound exactly like Paul. He will be exactly like Paul. His agenda will be Paul. That the beast is Pauline Christianity. Right to the T, right down to the nuances of the character, but it's exactly like Yosha said in the first and second chapters of Habakkuk. Embrace this. When he asked us, why are we unwilling to question him? And called Paul the plague of death. It's the same story. So, Rick, I've given you a challenge. I will devote any number of programs, all 3 hours, to your rebuttal of the information that is wielded against Paul in questioningpaul.com. It's free. Go there. Read it, and when you're done, we will have a discussion. You can email me at yada@yadayah.com, and that is my promise. I will give you all the time you want, but what you can't do is wish it away. you have to deal with reality. You're going to have to be able to explain how Paul can write that the covenant written in the Torah was with Hagar when God says exactly the opposite. You're going to have to deal with Paul's statement that the Torah cannot save when God says the opposite. You're going to have to deal with the fact that Paul was overtly against circumcision and Yahweh says if you're not circumcised, you can't participate in Passover, which means you can't become immortal. You can't participate in the covenant, which means that you can't be saved, you can't have a relationship with God, and you can't enter heaven. You're going to have to deal with the prophecy in Habakkuk that calls Paul the plague of death. You're going to have to find someone other than Paul who qualifies for the false apostle warning in the open letter to the Ephesians in Revelation and to Yahusha's comments in the Olivet Discourse regarding the claims of having seen him. You'll have to deal with some other candidate for the wolves in sheep's clothing. And there are none. But good luck with that, Rick. As I said, the offer is open to you. I hope you avail yourself of it. If you read Questioning Paul from beginning to end, and then you want to argue on Paul's behalf, I'm going to give you the opportunity to do so. But right now, we're finished, because all you have done is bypass the issues. You've not been able to deal with any of these conflicts. And until you are, there's no purpose in having a discussion. Now, moving on to the 18th chapter of Yahshua, salvation is from Yahweh. When Yahweh revealed that his spirit was going to blow the invading Muslims out of Israel, he said that this was going to occur prior to an approaching storm. Therefore, this continuing testimony appears to relate to that storm, to World War III, to the even more devastating aftermath of the Islamic attempt to conquer the Promised Land. We have been given every reason to suspect that the nation that instigated the Syrian Civil War, which was the United States of America, the nation that has played the greatest role in giving large swaths of Israel to the Muslims, which is the United States of America, the nation that built the weapons that the Islamic nations are and will continue to wield against Israel, which is the United States of America, is the very nation that will act up, pushing the rest of the world into war. It is what would have happened already if Putin hadn't prevented the United States from bombing Syria, a Russian and Chinese ally, by disposing of its chemical weapons back in 2013. If you are a patriotic American, consider this your warning. Woe, expressing dissatisfaction and a warning. To the land of whirling and buzzing wings, which is from the region beyond, on the opposite side of the world, from the direction of the rivers of Kush. Now, in our program on Friday, we specifically pointed out that there are two locations for the rivers of Kush, not one. God didn't say there was just one. And if you take a line from Israel through the northern Iran, Iraq, which is where the rivers of Kush traveled as they left the region of the Garden of Eden, that line intersects the northern part of Alaska. And then the rivers of Kush are associated with the Nile Delta. Throughout this book, the prophetic book of Yahshua and elsewhere. And if you draw a line from Jerusalem through the Nile Delta region, you intersect the Florida Keys, the southern tip of Texas, and the southern tip of the Hawaiian Islands. If you take a line and draw it directly across the Mediterranean Sea through the Straits of Gibraltar, it intersects the United States just above Washington, D.C., between Washington and New York City. And the whirling wings are what America is most known for as it invades other countries. Our attack helicopters. Our helicopter gunships. God goes on to describe this country. He says it dispatches envoys by way of the sea. And so in floating vessels on the surface of the waters, the messengers travel swiftly, indulgently, and immorally. The nation of people from different races and places is tall, intoxicated, and immodest. They have a propensity to take things away from others. They are scrubbed clean, smooth skin, and completely shaven, and yet typically reckless. These people are feared, some even revering them, from here to there and beyond, in a future time. This population is comprised of many different races, and it routinely vomits up and spews out nonsense in a strange foreign language, talking down to others, mocking them, while continually marching off to war on this condescending, moronic rhetoric, always trying to impose its influence. It aggressively subdues, trampling people underfoot and kicking them out. It is a country which is divided by rivers. More in a moment. Welcome back. When we consider the testimony in Yeshaya 18:2, we realize that most all of the Hebrew terms used in the prophetic declaration give us a word's eye view of the prophet's distant future, our present. In fact, he even says this is for a period well in advance of the time that he was writing. So we should not be surprised that each of the terms are rich in their implications, but they are uncommon in their usage because you wouldn't use these terms to describe events in Yeshaya's time. He was speaking about an entirely different world. I mean, same planet, but the things that he was seeing in terms of aircraft carrier battle groups and attack helicopters and listening to in terms of American verbosity, that was seeing even this land of America in the New World, way beyond anything that he had common parlance to describe. So almost every word used in this portion of Yeshaya is used no place else. Therefore, it's important that we pay very close attention to the roots, to the etymology of each one of these words, so that we consider the full range of their connotations. And that's what I did as I shared with you that passage. It was amplified because it is quite possible that every one of the implications of every one of those terms is intended. And it's certainly not our position to shortchange God and say, you know, I think I'm going to convey part of what this word means, but not the other parts, especially when every part seems to be consistent and speak of the same country. We know from these words that this nation is on the far side of the world when viewed from Jerusalem. We know that it projects its influence using its fleet, so it should be noted that the United States has the largest navy in the history of the world. The nation deploys 12 massive aircraft carrier battle groups to swiftly project its power far and wide, more than the rest of the world combined. There is no other nation on earth that can project a force, and the United States can do it overwhelmingly. It is the, if there is a primary distinction in terms of influence and power between the United States and every country that has ever existed prior to the United States, that's where the prophet Yeshaya began. Was on that distinction. There are two more aircraft carriers that are currently under construction, so we should not be surprised by the reference to rapid gunboat diplomacy. No nation has ever deployed a more capable or more fearsome arsenal of oceanic, or airborne weapons than America. It is perhaps why the nation is feared and revered, sometimes respected, but often intimidating. A few years ago, WikiLeaks made thousands of cables between American ambassadors and U.S. State Department officials available, revealing the cold, arrogant, and immoral nature of the country's envoys. They revealed that the United States remains oblivious when it comes to the consequence of its actions. For example, Very few Americans acknowledge that the country's invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq were based on a web of lies and that both were counterproductive, making bad situations worse. And yet that reality was openly discussed in diplomatic cables while Americans stayed in positions and continued to die. This reality is why so many returning American troops are committing suicides. States reporting 40% of the U.S. population, documenting less than 70% of the military suicides in those states, report 22 per day, revealing that the actual number must be over 80 suicides per day. When this is extrapolated over the 10 years since Americans began returning from Afghanistan and Iraq, it equates to an astonishing 200,000 to 300,000 American troops taking their own lives as a consequence of these foolish, immoral, deadly, and destructive invasions. The world is full of goyim, Gentiles. But one nation, and only one, is known expressly for racial diversity. America, it's the melting pot. It is grown by beckoning people from around the world. And this prophecy, in it, a goy nation of many races, is singular. Therefore, in one solitary country. Now, you just look at human history. Particularly in a nation that's on the other side of the world from Israel. A nation in a distant time. From the time that this was recorded in 725 BCE. And you tell me another nation known for its naval prowess, its air prowess, and its racial diversity. We'll return to Shattering This at this time tomorrow. May Yah bless.